Well, we are glad to be able to be here this morning and to worship with you. I couldn't help but think, as Ward was saying, that he regretted that we were going to New York tomorrow. I thought, yeah, me too. We're going with 20-something ninth graders. I regret that we're going too. Not really. We enjoy taking student groups and going on trips. So we're actually looking forward to going, but we are having to leave rather early in the morning. Real early in the morning, so we have to get back and get some things ready for that. Here we are at the 4th of July weekend, Independence Day. We celebrate liberty and independence in our country, and we put a very high value on that. We're involved in conflicts at other places in the world, trying to give other people the same rights that we enjoy. And our country has a long history of emphasizing that. It's been my pleasure twice during the past year to visit Williamsburg and that area and be reminded again of the very early days of the history of our country and the emphasis that people had on being able to basically to do what they please and to not be told by other people what they have to do. But sometimes we can get a little extreme with that idea, the idea that I should be able to do what I please. That nobody should tell me what to do. Through many years of working with teenagers, I've heard that a lot. I just get so tired of people telling me what to do. It's been interesting how many times through the years I've heard a teenager say, "I can't wait till I'm 18." Like something magical is going to happen. But all of a sudden, nobody would tell them what to do anymore if they were just 18. For a few of those folks, I've had to break the awful news to them that, especially sometimes those are teenagers who were in trouble, that it just gets worse when you get 18. You know, you do what you just did when you're 18, you'll go to jail. You know, so you won't just be in trouble at home. But anyway, we hear those kind of comments a lot in children because children are creatures of innocence and selfishness. And they want what they want when they want it. One of my just really distinct childhood memories, and I'm sure I was told this a lot of times, but I remember the time this just hit me like a ton of bricks. I wanted to do something, and I remember my dad telling me that you can't always do what you want. I remember thinking, what? I can't? I just, you know, it's like, I'm sure I'd been told that before, but I must have listened there for a moment. It just hit me like, what an incredible piece of information that was, that I couldn't always do what I wanted to. I remember my own son, Jim. I remember one time this was one of my all-time favorite parent moments. You know, sometimes as parents, you just pull one on them. You think, oh, that was great. I don't know where that came from, but I got him that time. But, I told him to go clean his room and he started complaining and grumbling about that he didn't want to. I don't want to clean my room. And I said, okay, you don't have to. I said, I don't have to clean my room? I said, no, you don't have to want to. And from then on, he would always try to catch himself before he said he didn't want to do something because he knew what was coming. Anytime I caught him saying, I don't want to, I'd say, that's okay. Oh, he got me again. You know, you don't have to want to do it. You just have to do it. Well, you know, it comes as a shock to a lot of adults, too. It's not just kids. That we can't always just do what we want to. That even as adults, we're not just here to do as we please. But the world would tell us otherwise. The world would say, hey, do what you want to. Please yourself. Don't let other people push you around. For the older folks, remember the commercial, grab all the gusto. You know, just do what you want to. Do your own thing. Live your own life. Be free. I want to read a passage from Romans chapter 15, the first six verses of Romans chapter 15, which I think is just has an amazing statement in it. Romans chapter 15, beginning with verse 1. Now we who are strong ought to bear the weaknesses of those without strength and not just please ourselves. Let each of us please his neighbor for his good, to his edification. For even Christ did not please himself. But as it is written, the reproaches of those who reproach thee fell upon me. For whatever was written in earlier times was written for our instruction, that through the perseverance and encouragement of the Scriptures we might have hope. Now may the God who gives perseverance and encouragement grant you to be of the same mind with one another according to Christ Jesus, that with one accord you may with one voice glorify the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. Next time I have the feeling that I don't want to do something I need to do or ought to do, I can remember that Jesus can say, I didn't want to either. What an amazing statement that Jesus, even Jesus, did not get to please himself. What an amazing thing for Paul to tell us. So when I'm feeling like, hey, I want to do what I please, that he tells us that even Christ did not please himself. Now that, again, doesn't mean that he wasn't pleased with himself, but in the sense that he didn't always get to do what he pleased in that sense. Jesus came to bring a revolutionary approach to life, an outward orientation to life. The idea of putting others first, of serving. Jesus would say, deny yourself and take up a cross. Well, that's not the same as denying our worth or our value. It's not like saying, well, I must be close to denying myself because I feel pretty worthless already. It's not that idea. Because we're worth everything. We're created in the image of God. We were worth the death of Jesus, God's own Son. We're described as the children of God. It's not that we have to be a servant. It's that we're free to be a servant. In John chapter 13, as Jesus came to the end of his life, and we have recorded for us some of the incidents that happened in the upper room shortly before his arrest, I think there's really an amazing thing that's said that leads up to Jesus washing the apostles' feet. It says in John chapter 13, beginning with verse 3, it says, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hand, and that he had come forth from God and was going back to God, rose from supper, laid aside his garments, taking a towel, girded himself, poured water, began to wash feet, so forth. It's interesting what it says about Jesus right before he begins to wash feet. It says that Jesus is thinking about some things. You know, it's interesting to know what would he be thinking about during this evening. He's thinking about that God has given everything into his hands, that he came from God. He's about to go back to God. Then he begins to wash feet. Jesus was free to be a servant because he didn't have to prove anything to these guys. He knew who he was. He knew that God had given him everything. He knew where he had come from, knew where he was going. He was secure in God, secure in himself. It didn't threaten him to get down on his knees and wash feet because he wasn't trying to prove anything to them. It wasn't that he had to wash feet. He was free to wash feet because he knew who he was. When you belong to God, your destiny is secure. You feel free then to be a servant. In 1 Corinthians 9, verse 19, Paul said, "For though I am free from all men, I have made myself a slave to all." It wasn't that Paul had to do that. Paul certainly was a force to be reckoned with. He stood before governors, kings, and apparently Caesar himself. No one could tell Paul what to do, and yet he was willing to be a servant and to serve those around him. And again, as Paul tells us in Romans 15, that Christ did not please himself. But he goes on to say that he paid for what others had done. Though he was free, he was willing to pay the debt that others owed. And so if we're to have that kind of freedom, if we're to be free to serve, that begins first with a determination to please God rather than pleasing ourselves. Who was Jesus trying to please? If he didn't please himself, who was he pleasing? Well, of course, he was pleasing God. Paul tells us in that same passage about Jesus not pleasing himself He says that it's God who gives perseverance and encouragement. It's God who gives us the ability to be free to serve. He gives us the ability to seek to please Him. In the book of Ephesians, in the first chapter, there's an expression that Paul uses over and over, and that expression is, to the praise of His glory. That Paul saw life as being lived not to please ourselves, not to bring praise and honor and glory to ourselves, but that life is to be lived to bring praise and honor and glory to God. That's the reason. That's why we're here. In John chapter 4, there's an interesting encounter between Jesus and His apostles where they ask Him if He's hungry. It's just a fairly normal thing to ask. They would be busy and kind of going in different directions, and they come back together after they've all been separated, and just a really normal thing, they ask Jesus, are you hungry? And Jesus said, no. And they said, you're not hungry? Have you already had something to eat? Just the most normal of conversations like all of us would have with each other. Have you already had something to eat? And Jesus said, my food is getting to do what God wants me to do. I'm not sure that always exactly fills your stomach. I'm not sure how long you could physically live on that. But it just shows what Jesus was thinking about. That they were thinking about, hey, it's lunchtime. Let's find something to eat. And Jesus said, my food is to do the will of Him who sent me. In John chapter 8, we have Jesus recorded as saying, for I always do the things that are pleasing to Him. Imagine being able to say that. Are you pretty happy with your life? You get to do what you want to. Jesus said, I always get to do what pleases God. So just a different way of looking at life. In 2 Timothy chapter 2, Paul uses two real short illustrations that help illustrate the idea of this sort of dedication to what pleases God. And he uses the example of a soldier and an athlete. And the example in both cases are that those two different things, either being a soldier or an athlete, require a great deal of dedication. If you're a soldier, then you can't become entangled in the affairs of civilian life, because the soldier part is going to have to take precedence over that. So if they're in conflict with each other, you're going to have to pick whatever you need to do as a soldier. So in other words, if you're a soldier and trying to operate some business on the side, your business on the side may get interfered with when you get shipped off someplace. But you have to be dedicated to the concept of being a soldier if you're going to be a soldier. And the same would be true with being an athlete. I don't know if you've been watching any of the Olympic trials on television. I saw a little of it last night. The runners and the swimmers and the gymnasts, those folks are going through it. And it requires an incredible amount of determination and dedication to get to that level as an athlete. We all kind of understand that. But Paul uses those two things, the soldier and the athlete, as examples of what it's like to be a Christian. That it takes that kind of dedication to God that sort of preempts everything else. And it means that person's just dedicated to primarily and first of all to that. And so this means then not only then the whole idea of not just pleasing ourselves, means that not only am I first and foremost committed to pleasing God, but that I'm also committed to encouraging other people and putting other people first. He says that we are to build up our fellow Christians, to bear the weaknesses of others, to seek the good of others. So again, Jesus did not just please Himself, but went about seeking and serving the people whom He came in contact with. And so as Christians, we build up our fellow Christians and encourage each other. Again, not just pleasing ourselves, but doing those things that please other people, that please the church. In Philippians chapter 2, Paul said, do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind, let each of you regard one another as more important than himself. Now, let's think about that for a minute. Paul said, don't do anything out of selfishness. Wow, don't do anything out of selfishness. But with humility of mind, let each of you regard one another as more important than himself. It doesn't mean you are more important than I am. It just means I'm willing to treat you like you're more important than I am. We don't have to settle who's more important. I just treat you as more important than I am. You ever met somebody that just made you feel special? I've met some people who definitely outranked me in life, whether in any way you wanted to count rankings. And yet they were just the nicest people, treated me like they were glad and honored to meet me. And I was thinking, wow, I think it's the other way around. But there's people who are just like that. And I think that's the idea that Paul's talking about here. People who just treat other people as more important than they themselves. In Ephesians, Paul said to be subject to one another in the fear of Christ. In Romans 12, he said, be devoted to one another in brotherly love. Give preference to one another in honor. He says that instead of putting me first, I put you first. In Romans, also in Romans chapter 12, Paul said not to think of ourselves more highly than we ought to think. And then he goes on to use the illustration of the human body and all the various parts that make up the body. And the idea being that no one part can say, I'm the most important part. It takes all the parts. All the parts have to work together under the leadership of the head. And it's kind of silly. It would be silly for individual parts to argue with each other over who is most important. And so that's what Paul says about the church. All right, so it's important that I'm not just please myself, but that I see that first and foremost I have to be pleasing to God. Second, that I have to try to be pleasing to you, try to please other people, particularly in the church, as we encourage and build each other up and bear each other's weaknesses. But also, it's important that I seek to please others if I'm going to try to reach the lost. Paul said in 1 Corinthians 10, I please all men in all things. Okay, so Paul said, I really work hard to get along with other folks. I really work hard at trying to please other people. Well, why would you do that? Not seeking my own profit, but the profit of the many, that they may be saved. Paul said, I reach out to other people. I try to please other people, do things for other people, so that I might have the opportunity to have influence over them. And I might have the opportunity to reach out to them that they might be saved. In 1 Corinthians 9, Paul said, for though I am free from all men, so Paul says, nobody's got a right to tell me what to do. For though I am free from all men, I have made myself a slave to all, that I might win the more. To the Jews, I've become a Jew. To those not Jewish, I act like I'm not Jewish. To the weak, I act weak. And he goes through a list there that I try to accommodate myself to the people I'm around. Again, not compromising values, but just in terms of getting along with folks. That I become like the people I'm around. Okay. That by all means, I might save some. Paul said, I work to please other people, to fit in with other people, to be like other people so that I can influence them and have an opportunity to save them. So I'd ask myself, am I what the people around me need? Do I interact with people in such a way that it gives me an opportunity to have influence over them, to be able to share with them? Am I concerned when people need love or patience or understanding or strength, or teaching, or encouragement, or whatever it is that they need? Is that what I'm trying to do and trying to give? In addition, I can't just please myself. If I'm going to have a strong and successful family, that's kind of one of those well-done sort of things. If I just operate in my family just doing what I please all the time, then that's not going to be the best thing probably I could do for my family. But what do they need? What pleases them? Is it time, love, encouragement, maybe helping with homework, working in the yard, watching kids, running errands, listening, giving my undivided attention every once in a while, you know, whatever it is that pleases them, not just pleasing myself, but again, reminding myself that even Jesus didn't just go through life pleasing himself, but asking what can I do to help. And ultimately, all this does in fact help me. It's strange how things come back to us. But how does not pleasing myself help me? Well, don't we all feel good when we know we've helped somebody else? If we do something like going on a mission trip to Honduras or Panama or some of the trips that are New Orleans or numerous other things that we could do, where there's really nothing in it for us. We're just going to help other people who really have no way to pay us back. But don't we usually get more out of that than they do? When we truly do something for someone else. I heard a story just over the weekend, and we were talking about this. I think we've encountered some of these people that belong to this story in an airport not long ago. So there's a man who is a retired military officer himself, and then he was working for the VA, working in a hospital after retirement. And he was really touched by the idea that of course, a few years ago, our country built a World War II memorial on the mall area, the big grassy area in Washington, D.C. We built a World War II memorial. It's been there 4 years now. And he was troubled as he began talking to veterans who had come through his VA hospital how few of the World War II veterans had seen the memorial. Again, obviously, World War II veterans are pretty old, and he couldn't find anybody who had seen it. Obviously, there are a lot of visitors, but just the folks he was coming in contact with. And he would ask them, well, why haven't you been? Well, you know, don't have money to get there, or it's too hard to get there, you know, whatever. And he lived in Dayton, Ohio, and the folks he ran into couldn't get to Washington. And that just really touched him, and he decided he was going to do something about that. He happened to be a private pilot, had several friends who were private pilots, and so he began asking some of these veterans, if we'd take you, would you go? Oh, we'd love to go. And so he rounded up several of his friends, and they started just taking World War II veterans to Washington, D.C. for a day where they could visit the memorial. And through his efforts, this has now grown to a national effort. They're called honor flights, and they also now raise money where the veterans fly on commercial flights. And we encountered one of these groups in an airport someplace. We're trying to remember what airport we were in when we encountered this group, maybe Baltimore, where they announced over the PA system in the airport that a group of World War II veterans was arriving at gate C-22 or something. And we happened to be standing close to that gate. And sure enough, as these veterans became coming off the plane, many of them being assisted, some of them in wheelchairs, the whole airport, a crowded airport, just erupted into applause and a standing ovation given for these World War II veterans as they got off the plane. And I thought again about here's a man who just he quit his job at the VA and is just now dedicating himself full time to this mission. And as he was talking, his eyes began to water, and he this was on the Today Show, and he kind of chuckled and said, "Talking about this makes my allergies act up." But again, I just thought of all that in terms of just doing something for other people. There's nothing in any of this for him. He ended up on the Today Show, but I'm sure that wasn't the reason he started this campaign to help other people. Servanthood, Jesus said, was the path to true greatness. In 2 Corinthians chapter 12, Paul said that power is perfected in weakness, that in weakness you're made strong. Through service, through putting God and others ahead of myself, I find God's power and strength. I find true freedom. Jesus said, if the Son makes you free, then you're really free. You're free indeed. By surrendering our lives to Him, in that act of surrender and submission, we find ultimate freedom and liberty, far superior to the illusion of freedom that comes from just trying to do what I please. This morning, if you would find that ultimate freedom, we would encourage you to surrender your life, your heart, to God. Not because there's something in it for you, though there is, but because through that ultimate act of sacrifice, of giving up our lives to Him, when we become identified with the sacrifice that He made for us, our death of our spirit, death of our will, identifies us with His death. And then we have an opportunity, if you've not done that, through baptism, to participate in His burial and resurrection, that, as Paul said, then to walk a new life. A life of freedom. A life of freedom to serve. If you need to do that this morning, or any of the prayers of this church, or in other ways this church could help you, we'd encourage you to come as we stand together and sing.